This is episode 509 of the Prepper Website Podcast, where I connect you with resources that will help you live a more self-reliant life so you can love your people, get prepared, and live free. Today's article, Four Shocking Survival Lessons from the Australian Pioneers. Hey, I'm Todd Sepulveda, the editor of PrepperWebsite.com. This podcast is an audible version with some commentary of articles that have been posted on Prepper Website, a daily curation of preparedness information. These articles are some of the best of the best that have been recently posted on PrepperWebsite.com. All article links and show information can be found on the PrepperWebsitePodcast.com. Hey, this episode is sponsored by the HydroBlue VersaFlow Water Filter. The VersaFlow is one of the most versatile water filters currently made. Not only can you use it for your personal water filter needs, but you can use it to create a family-sized water filter. Now, with the possibility of filtering up to 100,000 gallons, the VersaFlow could filter 1 gallon of water for each family member for many, many years. Now, to make it easy for you, I've created a free video and PDF tutorial that shows you how to easily turn the VersaFlow into a family-sized water filter. Right now, you can have this family-sized water filter for under $25. To watch the video, get the free PDF tutorial and a code for 20% off of the VersaFlow, click the link in the show notes or visit prepperwebsite.com/VersaFlow. All right, guys. So our article of the podcast comes to us from askaprepper.com. The title is Four Shocking Survival Lessons from the Australian Pioneers. Now, I don't believe these are shocking survival lessons, but they are survival lessons. Things that we need to remember, things that we would help us if we ever found ourselves in those situations. Again, the more you learn, the more you're able to add to your, in education, it's called schema, right? The more you're able to add to your body of knowledge that you have in your background knowledge, in your mind, then the better you can make decisions, the more you understand how things work, and it just is just helpful, right? So you want to continue to add. So these are some things that the author over at askaprepper.com has identified as some things that, you know, some lessons that we could all learn from. And so I hope that you find them valuable. So let's go ahead and start. Modern society attributes many unique things to Australia: boomerangs, kangaroos, wallabies, the outback, and the Sydney Opera House are some of the most iconic Australian symbols that the world associates with the country today. Few are aware, however, of the long, rich, and often shocking history dating back to the founding of Australia as a penal colony. When the first fleet of British ships arrived in Sydney, South Wales, in 1788, the passengers were mostly convicts being essentially dumped in a strange new world. With few supplies and indifference to their well-being by the British, this ragtag group was forced to quickly learn how to survive on their own. Each convict was given 2 years' rations, 1 year worth of clothing, and little else. Few of the convict settlers had any agricultural experience or other skills that would make building a self-sustaining colony possible. Now, mostly through trial and error, the Australian settlers began to thrive in their new home with a barter economy and new agricultural methods, despite harsh punishments by the captors and the threat of deadly diseases. So a barter economy was favored. Each colony was led by a British governor who was appointed by the monarchy. While the British used the pound sterling as currency, the colonists did not. Instead, the colonists relied on a barter economy with rum, corn, and wheat becoming the most desirable forms of currency. Now, harsh punishment led to revolts. Perhaps not surprisingly, the colony of convicts had its share of crime and undisciplined citizens, theft of food and other provisions, as well as lack of motivation on the part of the settlers to help build a sustainable colony, led to extreme measures by the governors and soldiers to bring order and discipline to the settlers. Instead of creating productive and well-regulated groups, however, the severe punishments led to a series of bloody revolts against the governors. What about the new agricultural methods that had to be developed? The climate and soil of Australia was much different from what the settlers, mostly British and Irish, were accustomed to, so new ways of farming and irrigation had to be developed. The lack of irrigation was solved by creating rock pools that filled with fresh water, while the Aboriginal practice of fire scrubbing, using fire to clear land and regenerate flora, was adopted to increase the land's food production. Now, deadly diseases were rampant. When the settlers landed on their new land, they knew they faced many dangers which they had to survive. Starvation, dehydration, and death from exposure were well-known threats. Due to a lack of scientific understanding, however, the settlers were unprepared for perhaps the deadliest situation they would face, the rampant spread of fatal diseases made worse by a lack of medical supplies. Epidemics including smallpox, chickenpox, typhoid fever, tuberculosis, measles, influenza, and cholera killed many of the early settlers, but their death toll was nothing compared to that of the Aboriginal people. Over half of the indigenous population died from European diseases in the first few years of settlement. So let's talk about four lessons that we can apply to survive. Here are some key takeaways from the Australian pioneers that you can add to any modern day survival plan. The first one is this: don't count on your cash or debit or credit cards. Now, many survival situations are made worse by the lack of electricity, partly because we need power to access our bank accounts via cards or to withdraw cash. In long-term survival situations, your cash and cards will only be good for kindling. Stock up now on barter items such as sugar, alcohol, salt, and other goods that can be traded for the things you and your family need. Okay, so let's temper that just a little bit here. Sometimes we read something or we're thinking, you know, you don't always know the frame of mind that the person was in when they were writing it. They could have been, you know, well, they did say here, long-term survival. So if you're thinking long-term survival, yeah, money is going to be out the window. But sometimes people, I think, read stuff like that, or they might listen to it, like for instance on this podcast, and they say, you know what, I shouldn't have any cash. You know, I should just go straight to barter stuff. Well, if you remember just recently, just this week, I talked about having cash on hand, having an emergency fund, having cash at home and not necessarily, you know, at the bank or an ATM, because at the very onset of a true SHTF situation, most people aren't going to understand the whole big picture here. And so people will still be trading dollars for, you know, services and dollars for gear and goods and all that kind of stuff. So if there was a situation where maybe there was a bank holiday and things were shut down, but you had cash, you had some cash reserve, and you could go to the store, and people are coming into the store and they're saying, hey, we would like to do business with you, but all we have are credit cards and checks. But you come in and you say, I've got cash, then they're going to want to do business with you, right? So you can go ahead at the very beginning of a true SHTF scenario. A lot of people believe that you're going to be able to buy things that you need if you have cash. Now, eventually it'll go to a situation where maybe it goes to silver, maybe it goes to barter. Bartering would be very easily or done easily because you have goods, I have goods, we switch out. You know, if it goes to a silver, you know, something like that, well, then people need to first understand silver and understand that it is, you know, a holder of value. And so they would want to use that. And that might come a little bit later on. So right off the bat, it might be, hey, we're going to use our dollars. And then when everyone understands that that's not possible anymore, or they shouldn't be taking it because, you know, the economy or whatever, just life is going to change, then they go to bartering. And then maybe further down the road, long term, there really is, you know, silver, gold, precious metals, who knows, those might be available, right, where you can do that. So one of the things that I've always read in, you know, linking to articles for Prepper website, people talk about bartering and they talk about items to stockpile and things like that. I don't think that's necessarily bad to think about that or to even read articles like that, but you need to keep it into perspective. You don't want to go start, you know, putting a whole closet full of stuff together for your barter economy when you don't have all the other basics of preparedness put together. There's so many more things that you can do. And so, you know, you need to focus on all of that. If you find a deal on something that you think could be bartered, yeah, okay, whatever, go ahead and put it in a closet somewhere. But be smart about it. The best thing to do would be purchase things that you know that you can use, but you can stockpile. So if you had to barter, you could easily barter them, right? So I always think about stuff like hygiene products, especially like soap. But most people don't stockpile soap. I mean, think about it, you know, and that might be a conversation starter with somebody, one of your friends, right? Just like, hey, look, just let me ask you a question. If you went to your home, into your closet, how much soap do you have available? And some people are going to say, well, you know, I buy that three pack, right? And so that's what I have at home. And so if you think about how fast those go through, especially most of the soaps that, you know, they're not very solid. They kind of melt under the water. And so, you have that aspect of it. But people are going to be smelly. They're going to stink. They're going to want to be clean. So if you had a great stockpile of soap, even if you found, like one time I went to the store and I found these soaps that were, and it was a name brand. I can't remember the name brand now. Maybe Lava or whatever, but they were, this particular style or model was being discontinued and it was on clearance. And so I got this big box of like 12 for like a dollar or something crazy like that. And so like I went ahead and bought two or three of those. And I'm like, hey, I'm going to put these up here. I'm going to put them in my closet. I can take up some up to the country and I can just leave them there, because when we're up there, we really don't care what we smell like. We want to be clean, but we don't necessarily want to have, you know, the exact soap that we have, you know, in our homes or whatever. And so, you know, that's something that you can do, but that would be something smart to have. Something like toilet paper. I know that we've talked about that. That seems to be one of my things. Man, I don't like to imagine. You know, if you're used to, I know, Todd, I'm going to be a little maybe graphic here. Well, not too graphic, but you'll understand this. If you are used to using the restroom at home and you have a certain type of toilet paper that you like, and then you're forced to whatever, go use the toilet paper in some public restroom. You know, they don't buy the nice stuff. They buy that John Wayne toilet paper and you start using that. And you know, there is a big, big difference between what you have at home and what they put in some of these places. Now, think about not having anything and using the junk that's out there that a lot of people talk about, rocks and plants and or leaves and corn cobs and all that kind of stuff, you know. So think about, hey, I'm out of toilet paper. I would love to be able to use toilet paper. You know, what could I trade? What could I barter? That's probably would be something that people would want. And you know that if you stockpile that, the issue with stockpiling that is going to be space. But if you have the space and you stockpile that, you can use that, right? Just as long as you don't have a big rat infestation problem and they go in there and start tearing up all your toilet paper and making nests and all that kind of junk. But, you know, you can easily see that. There's a lot of other things like that. So you know what is needed for you, for your family, for your area. But if you were going to barter, don't go bartering or don't go buying stuff that you just, because you think, you know, it could be used in an SHTF scenario because you read it in an article or someone talked about it. You know, think about what you use on a regular basis. What could possibly, you know, what would somebody want? What would you trade for, right? If you didn't have it. And so you can kind of go from there. All right. So one of the other lessons learned is this: beware of martial law. In chaotic situations, those in charge may revert to martial law to keep the peace. Be ready for the prospect of having your daily activities curtailed, as well as strict curfews and rationing. Within your own prepper group, however, remember that while it is important to make sure everyone is a productive member of your community, overly harsh punishment may lead to revolt. All right, so again, this is one of those things you really gotta think it through and process it. Some people, I know I've read articles where people are like, everyone is going to contribute. And if you don't contribute, you're out of here, right? And so, you know, that would be a very harsh punishment for someone. There's going to be a lot of getting used to. If there was truly an SHTF situation, a lot of people that were used to, not even kids, you know, we talk about kids. There's a lot of adults that are gamers, and that's all they do, and they just lie around and watch TV, and you know, they drink Mountain Dew and sit in their mom's basement eating Cheetos in their underwear, right? And so that's all they do. And so if there was a poop hit the fan situation, they would have just like a real rude awakening, and they would need some time to adjust. But anyway, so you have this aspect of it. Again, I don't always fear the worst, you know, beware of martial law, all that kind of stuff. But eventually, if there was a true SHTF situation, there would come a time where there would be some kind of law put in place, or there would be some kind of, you know, punishments and, you know, things like that. That's something you read in all the apocalyptic books. Eventually, you know, it's kind of like the Wild West. And then eventually things start getting, you know, put into place. So anyway, that's one of those things where you need to, you know, you can think about it, have in the back of your mind that that's always a possibility, especially if you are in an area where there is a, you know, a lot of people, you know, a big population. If you're out in the country and you're a little bit more spread out, I don't see that happening as much. All right, so number three is diversify your agricultural methods and tools. If you're preparing to bug in at your home with your well-producing garden, bear in mind that certain circumstances, like fires, severe weather, or even hostile groups, may force you to start growing food somewhere else in a climate much different from what you are accustomed to. Familiarize yourself with a variety of irrigation and gardening techniques so you can have a fresh supply of food no matter where the situation takes you. Great advice there. I think that's a good idea to not only know how you are able to, you know, garden in your area. That's another thing. A lot of people garden right now and they're used to going to Home Depot, whatever, ordering certain, you know, fertilizers and all that kind of stuff. If you were in a true SHTF situation, kind of like the Australian, you know, pioneers, quote unquote pioneers, or, you know, those that were, you know, prisoners or whatever, convicts that were kind of dropped off, you're just figuring it all out. Do you know enough, or do you have books about gardening where you know how to do some natural fertilizers, you know how to do some natural ways of taking care of bugs and stuff like that, companion planting and you know, mulching and fertilizing and all the different things that you would, even watering, you know, if you didn't have a garden hose and water coming out of that garden hose or an irrigation, you know, you didn't have that ready to go, how would you go about doing that? I like the idea that if you have that possibility of having more land, right? So for instance, in my dad's place up in the country, we have, you know, we have our property, but across from us, there's that property has been completely just left, right? And so if there was a complete SHTF situation and no one came to stay at that property across from us, that might be a place where eventually I would want to go start to farm. I might want to go and maybe start small, but I could do that, right? Maybe I would want to set up a garden over there that would draw deer and other wild animals away from my own garden. They would go over there and they would eat that before they came and tore up my garden, right? So all different kinds of things there, but you would want to use all available land. That's why sometimes when people talk about an SHTF, if you're bugging in, you know, people were talking about you'll tear up your front yard, right? So no more, you know, garden green grass and all that kind of stuff. You're going to tear all that stuff up so that you can plant vegetables, so that you can have enough food. You're going to have to increase that. So always having knowledge about gardening, having a good understanding of what you can do, having some permaculture, you know, ideas and frames of mind. There is so much information out there. Videos where people are teaching, books, articles, now a podcast. Now is the time to learn as much as you can about, you know, gardening and agriculture as you can. And then there's you can't shoot germs. While self-defense is vital, some preppers fail to prepare for deadly disease and epidemics. Protect yourself and your family by stocking an ample supply of sanitary products, bleach, gloves, masks, garbage bags, and other items you can use to disinfect, dispose of waste, and prevent sicknesses from spreading. So true, right? A lot of the times we have these ideas of where we have our heads on a swivel, we're paying attention to all the things that could possibly harm us, and then something that we couldn't even see comes in and completely destroys our group or our family or our city or neighborhood or whatever it might be. One of the things that you hear when people talk about those that are in the know, that talk about medical supplies, is that you can never have enough, because even one big situation will eat through most medical supplies that people think they have. Like, you know, like I have this great big list of medical supplies and all this, you know, this stuff in my closet, and then you have one big thing and then boom, it's all gone. So that's one of the things that you can stock up on if you wanted to, going back to that barter thing. You know, medical supplies, one of those things that you can always use, but if you needed to, you could barter. Medicines, those types of things, gloves, face masks, N95 masks, all that kind of stuff would definitely work. Now, this article said bleach. Bleach does have a shelf life, but one of the things you can do is use pool shock. And, you know, so you keep pool shock and then you make a bleach solution. So I've talked about that before. There's plenty of information out there on the internet on how to do that. Pool shock is relatively cheap when you think about the long shelf life that has. One of the only cautions there is that it is corrosive. So even if it's in the package and you have it by like metal or whatever, for instance, if you have a pool and you have pool shock by your pool equipment, eventually it can eat away at your pool equipment. Now, I have a cousin who had a neighbor who had pool supplies and pool shock and chlorine and that type of stuff next to his water heater in the garage, and it completely corroded it. He wasn't paying attention, and you know, it just kind of went through it. So if you're going to stock pool shock, then I would put it in multiple bags and try to seal it as much as possible. So you know, you'll protect any kind of metal and things that can get corroded around there. But do look into the solution to make bleach out of pool shock. I think that is one of the things that everybody should have, because you can have it long term and you can use that solution to clean, and you're going to want to disinfect. So the article has one last bonus survival tip here. Let me read that here at the very end. It says, in every survival situation, it's important to familiarize yourself with the local plant life. Consider what plants grow well in your climate, and then prepare a gardening plan that includes both plants for food and plants that you can use to create natural remedies. By growing your own grocery store and pharmacy, your odds of not just surviving but thriving dramatically increase. You know, one of the things I like to go back to is that herbal medicine has been around a lot longer than modern medicine has been, and people have used it. Does it work just exactly like modern medicine? No. A lot of modern medicine has been, intensify it. They look at what is the ingredients that really help to, I don't know, whatever, heal, deal with pain, all that kind of stuff. And it's just very, very potent. So, but when you're looking at herbal remedies and stuff like that, they still work. But it's one of those things that you just realize that it's going to take a little bit longer to help relieve your symptoms. Most medicine out there is derived from some kind of plant. It's just been, you know, they've isolated it. They figured out, you know, what things cause it to, you know, help people feel better. And then they extract that and they multiply that effect 1,000 times, concentrate that so that, you know, they can sell it in a little pill. So that is something that you should think about. If you don't plan on ever bugging out, then you should think about your area and maybe do a little bit of research about wild edibles and herbs, and maybe even plant some of those things, right, that you can use if something like, you know, a true SHTF situation ever happened. Well, everyone, that is it for this article. Again, the title was Four Shocking Survival Lessons from the Australian Pioneers. It's over at askaprepper.com. Like always, I'm going to link to it in the show notes, and you can come and check it out for yourself. Well, everyone, that is it for episode 509. Hey, don't forget to subscribe to the show. Head on over to theprepperwebsitepodcast.com. That way you never miss another episode of Sweet Prepper Goodness. And take a moment to connect with me. I have a ton of ways to connect in the show notes. And with that, choose to live a more self-reliant life. Choose not to be so dependent on the government, grid, or the grind. Until tomorrow, stay prepped and aware. Peace.